Hello and welcome to the only cricket podcast that listens to the umpire whilst using DRS. After a bleak week for England cricket, we're here to try and cheer you up with some fun chat and of course the Euro and Ashes as Toby tries to go 4-1 up in the series. Now, Toby has said to me he's not feeling that great after what was of course a miserable week for England cricket, but let's ask how he is. How are you, mate?
Yeah, cricket-wise, not great. As disappointing loss for England. I mean, brings us back to earth, but otherwise, fine. You know, as good as you can be under current lockdown situations and all that. Yeah. How are you, mate?
Yeah, just hoping for the end of lockdown. And yeah, it's just pretty. It's quite miserable because we had the sort of joy of waking up every morning to a seemingly better and better situation, and to wake up and see England a 3-down, 4-down, 5-down. It's not quite as joyous as it once was, to be fair. So, like we said, it's been a very weird week for England cricket. After the win in Chennai, England were battered on a controversial pitch as India romped to a 317-run victory. Let's talk about the pitch, because it was a real son of a pitch, really. what were your thoughts on that? We'll call it a pitch for the purposes of this.
Yeah, not the biggest fan, I'd say. I think there was a lot of talk about it throughout the whole match and after the match and everything. Michael Vaughan being one of the biggest sort of haters of it, as he always seems to be. But I think the biggest problem really was that it wasn't made for 5 days of Test match cricket. I mean, it could have been finished on day three, for example, if India had, they almost didn't need to bat that second time. India, they could have just declared straight away. We would have failed to chase it down probably. And that would have been it at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. on yesterday morning. But that wasn't how they did it. And so it wasn't great. I don't blame India for trying to make turning pitches, particularly when they're 1-0 down in the series. But it was just how quickly it deteriorated. I guess, though, the thing that they might argue is that you look at Rohit Sharma getting 161 with an unbelievable innings. Ravi Ashwin as well, 106. Historic from him. He's the first man since Botham to get a 5 for 100, which when you're comparing anyone to Botham, you know they've done well. And it did show with Folkes and Ali both scoring runs that it was possible for English players to bat on it. But it was just a shame that they couldn't, none of the other batsmen could really push on. I think whenever Root's not scoring double hundreds, England are always going to be hard pressed for a win. What were your thoughts on the win, Dom?
Yeah, I think the pitch is the main contributor to it. I've heard Jonathan Agnew say it was like a beach. I've heard Michael Vaughan, like you said, moaning about it. And he's always wanted to get grass on places where there wasn't grass or hair, maybe, where there wasn't hair once before. Yeah, it was a horrible pitch. And it really sucked the joy out of the game, because I know England, we have our own sort of pitches unique to English cricket with a lot of swing and a lot of grass on the pitch. However, I've never seen a pitch that bad for a test series. And it does sort of make you wonder how legitimate is this? How much longer is this going to go on for? And does this make this a legitimate victory for India if they're playing on pitches that are so greatly favouring them? And it was such a horrible pitch. The only pitch I could think of I've played on that was worse was one just down near Somerset. And it was quite a fresh, it was quite a new cricket team. And you bowled a ball and black sort of soil, the sort of soil you get from like a gardening centre, would just pop up every time you delivered it. And that was an awful pitch. Still got a wicket, caught mid-on, but we move on. yeah, I think England were poor. I don't think you can blame Root. I think the selection, which we'll talk about in a little bit, wasn't great. And but I just thought Rohit Sharma, well played, one innings, 161. I think India were better. I think Cody's come out and given some quite, let's put it, dueling words, saying and didn't have the grit or determination India had. That's quite fighting words from a man who's lost 5 test matches in a row as captain up until now. So, okay, Virat, if you want to be like that. I thought Robbie Ashwin was very good. Like you said, first man since both of them in the series to get a 100 and a fifer. So well done to him. But I just think England were poor. So I just briefly mentioned there about England's selection. And it's the first time that England have made four changes on foreign soil after winning for the first time ever, which is incredible to think of. Think about all those games where England might have been up in a series. And for this to be the first time after a historic win in Chennai to go and decide to make four changes is, well, it was an interesting decision. So let's go through the changes for the 11. Moeen Ali came in for Dom Bess. Ollie Stone for Jofra Archer because Archer had an injury to his elbow. James Anderson out for Stuart Broad. I think this is a tactical change to keep Jimmy for Ahmedabad for the day-night test match. And Ben Folkes for Josh Butler. Toby, let's start with the first swap. Moeen Ali comes in for Dom Bess. What were your thoughts on Moeen Ali's performance? And do you think Dom Bess would have made a difference, maybe?
I don't think Bess would have made a difference, personally. I think I can't see there's a huge amount of difference between him and Ali, really. They're both, neither are especially consistent with their off-spin, which is a bit of a shame. They can both bat a bit, and I could have seen Bess do something similar to Ali, just a bit of a smash towards the end, which was a great knock from him, to be fair. But I just think it's really odd that Ali has come on this sort of six-match tour to Sri Lanka and India, played one match, and then's going home for the last couple. Obviously had COVID in Sri Lanka, couldn't play. It seems very odd, though, that he's come in, played one match, and is being sent home straight away. And I think it is, there's been a huge amount of talk about the sort of the rotation policy of England on this tour. And I think this is probably one of the biggest points that he's being come in one game, which a lot of people probably wouldn't have brought him in after Bess took four in the last match. And then he's come in, he's played all right. He's taken eight wickets in the match, I think it was. Seven wickets in the match, something like that. Bowled well, scored a good 40 towards the end. And then he's being sent home in favour of the white ball series, which seems interesting to me. I don't know, what did you think of this, Dom?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I've made it vocal. I'm not always the biggest fan of Moeen Ali. I would have much preferred to have Dom Bess, not only because his name's Dom, but I think he's come on leaps and bounds since the Sri Lanka tour. And to me, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. If you want to build up rhythm, I know it's hot. I know it's difficult to play in these conditions. But momentum is a real thing. I know people say, oh, I don't believe in momentum. It is. If Jeetan Patel has been fantastic for those spinners, and in fact, Moeen looked rusty, he had moments of brilliance, but Dom Bess, who's getting acclimatised to that pitch, who'd been acclimatised to the weather, playing very well down the order as well, batting-wise, for him to be dropped for Moeen Ali, who's going to make a one-and-done appearance, it looks like, was a bizarre sort of call. And I'm going to be honest, I don't see Moeen Ali coming back into the test side unless there is a sort of spate of injuries, really. I think Jack Leach and Dom Bess have proven their worth as bowlers and with an extent to the bat, with the bat. I think Moeen Ali offers a lot more with the bat, like his 100 in Bristol against the West Indies, one of the great innings, and I was lucky enough to be there. But as a spin bowler, I'd take Dom Bess or Jack Leach any day of the week. We move on to Ollie Stone for Jofra Archer. Now, obviously, whilst England had a rotation policy, you can't do anything about injuries, unfortunately. Jofra Archer missed out, but he also described this pitch as a dread to bowl on, so he was almost lucky he didn't play. What were your thoughts on Ollie Stone? Because his first wicket was sensational, wasn't it?
I was hugely impressed by Stone. I think he's always been, for the last few years, in and around the side. He played that test match against Ireland a few years back at Lord's and looked fantastic. Took three wickets for about 20 or something, averaged nine with the ball for his first year as an England cricketer. And what I saw in the test match, he looked great as well. Pretty much always around 140, 150k, which you can't really ask more from a quick bowler. He didn't bowl a huge number of overs in the second innings. But in that first innings, the first few overs he bowled looked fantastic. The wicket straight up was fantastic at Gill. And then cleaned up the tail as well, which you can't really ask much more from a quick bowler in these kind of conditions. You're not expecting them to go out and blow away Kohli, Rahane, Pant, all of these kind of players with the ball seeming everywhere. So I think it was great by Ollie Stone. And it's good to see that we do have a depth of fast bowlers with Archer, Stone, Wood and a few others in behind the scenes as well. What did you think, Dom? Good performance, wasn't it?
Ollie Stone really demonstrated the depth in English cricket with fast bowling. There was almost a brief period where there was seemingly no one we could get in. I think Boyd Rankin even had a test at the end of the 2013-14 Ashes, and that might be the low moment of English fast bowling, it's fair to say. A man who's now gone on to play for test matches for Ireland. And whilst I like Boyd Rankin, he was never test standard, it's fair to say. I think Ollie Stone played very well. I think he's almost generationally unlucky because he's come in and there's three magnificent fast bowlers at the moment in Archer and Wood, and obviously Broad Anderson, but they never play together and neither do Archer and Wood. But he just, it's very unlikely he will get many test matches. But hopefully he can maybe wiggle his way into the test side, the ODI side, T20 side. I was really impressed with him. And I think it's good to see that England have got so many players who they can call up maybe next winter for the Ashes on hard surfaces if there is a spate of injuries, which can happen sometimes. So Broad out for Anderson, who bowled out a magnificent spell of 3 for 8, and that over, which is arguably the greatest over since Freddie at Ponting and Langer. What were your thoughts on this? I didn't have any problems with this. Broad bowled fine. It wasn't anything to write home about. It wasn't good, nor was it bad. It was perfectly fine. But Anderson being saved for Ahmedabad with that day-night test match in 10 to 9 days. Toby, what were your thoughts on this decision?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I can't see any problems. You can't risk Anderson and Broad in these conditions, I'd say. If you're not going to go and make them bowl 50 overs in a day and run up and down and play four or five test matches in a row. So I think it's good to see. And I think it interesting, a lot of people forgot that the Broads in that first match against Sri Lanka was fantastic. Took 3 wickets in that first innings and bowled fantastically. And then they used this rotation policy. Broad and Anderson, who went and took 6 in the second. So I don't think you can blame them for making changes, because it's not like Broad's a bad bowler at all. So I think it's fine to see. And I think they might both even be playing in that Ahmedabad. At least Anderson will. Maybe they might say Broad for that final match. And I guess in that last one, Dom, Folks for Butler, the biggest change. What did you think of them?
I thought Folks was magnificent behind the stumps. That got a lot of praise on social media, and I thought that was bang on. Whilst we were both a bit hesitant, it's fair to say, about taking Butler out, who'd been very good, if anything, got his first stumping, was starting to make really good headway. What Ben Folks does with the gloves is what Josh Butler offers with the bat. He saves so many runs. There wasn't an extra in the first day's play because of Folks, because he was so consistent behind the stumps. And it was incredible. And I can't think of another day where wickets have fallen and there's been no interruption of play and there not be a single extra on a pitch as horrendous as that. Folks did a magnificent job, and he was the best keeper in England at the moment as a pure keeper. Whether he can do that with the bat is remained to be seen. We saw a bit of that coming in the second and late in the first innings, as he was able to just hang around on such a horrible pitch. What were your thoughts? Because I thought Folks deserves his spot in the next test match.
Yeah, I've been a huge advocate for Folks since I've started watching Surrey properly, I'd say. He's always been unbelievable at Surrey, takes some fantastic catches, and standing up is probably where it makes the biggest difference. But I think a lot of people don't understand how good a batsman he is as well. And I think he's nothing like Butler, nothing really like Bairstow, but he is a great batsman, and people do seem to forget that. And I think when you combine that with his keeping and the wickets he'll take just from the catches and the stumpings he makes on his own, it is possibly getting to the stage where maybe he needs to get into the team alongside Butler, who might shift up and field. But yet again, it's so hard to tell, because Butler has been so fantastic for the first 3 matches and over the summer as well, kept very well. So it's a really hard conversation to have. And I think they'll probably see how Folks keeps for the next couple games against India. And then maybe during the summer, they might keep this rotation policy going and mix and match. And Butler will keep in some games. Folks might keep in others with Butler batting or being rested. So I think it's interesting to see, really. And I'd say it must be mentioned, though, how poor some of the umpiring was. I mean, the incident in the first innings where the third umpire just ignored a wicket. Very interesting. The poor stumping decision.
Your Valentine's Day wasn't good, was it?
I know, it's on my mind. It's hard sometimes. And then, I mean, Joe Root's ghost LBW as well. Dom, what were your thoughts on this third umpiring decisions and everything going around it?
Well, with the pitch, with some of the decisions, until the Root decision, I genuinely thought there was something going on. It was almost dodgy about how India had been battered, and then somehow there's communication errors when it's quite impossible to have communication errors, and a blatant stumping. I'm sorry, that was out. I don't care if you don't have a different angle. The evidence shown on the screen was clearly out. His foot was on the line, nothing behind it. It was on the line. You've got to give that out. And then the Joe Root ghost LBW. I have never seen such a bad call. I realised they were just bad umpires, and there was nothing malicious going on behind the scenes. I've given a worse LBW out where the other side genuinely took away their appeal. It was that bad. I gave it out. So I felt for the umpires, but you're international umpires, and to get a DRS decision wrong was incredible when there's literal a charade of what they were asking for with Stokesy and Rooty almost playing charades with the umpire, and to get it those three so wrong was quite disappointing, I thought. And Toby, it was such a miserable test match, and you can probably hear it in our tones, listener, that we just feel a bit deflated. England were disappointing, bad pitch, and umpiring poor. What were your thoughts on the umpiring, Toby?
Yeah, it's a shame to see. I think you can never really blame the on-field umpire for lots of calls, because the speed at which Archer, Stone, Bumrah, the likes of these guys bowl at is split second. They have the batsmen have 0.5 of a second to react, and then the umpire is meant to make a decision on that. Sorry, but then it's a few of those. Yeah, the DRS things, which it was turning into VAR, which just made no sense, because cricket has been so good with DRS for so long now. It's always been the, oh, how can we make VAR into DRS? How can we make how can they get to the standard that DRS has been at? And it's just a shame to see how it not necessarily deteriorated, but just fell off a cliff for this one test. And hopefully they'll get back onto it next test, and it'll be normal again. And maybe in the future they'll find out ways to stop all of this just happening in one-off test matches or in series or however it is. And then I guess onto the next test match, which hopefully is a bit better. It's a much nicer time. I think nine o'clock first ball's bowled, so I won't be seeing the 4 a.m. session just from being after a night out of drinking alone in my room. And
the bleakest. Oh man.
And yeah, so Dom, thoughts on the next test match? There's quite a few players coming back. Bairstow's coming back, Crawley's coming back, Archer hopefully coming back. Do you think these guys are going to slot into the side? There's been a lot of talk about Burns and Lawrence at the top of the order, Pope a little bit under the weather with his batting, and I guess some of the quicks being rotated again. How do you think the team might line up for next week?
I won't be able to tell you the team until Archer has decided whether he's fit or not. That's not me having to go Archer the way I phrased that was poor. But if he's fit, he's definitely in. If he's not, I think Broad or even Mark Wood might come into play. But I'm not too sure yet. It really depends if the groundsman at Ahmedabad gets the note from Chennai about how to create a beach in the middle of a cricket pitch. Because if it does, then England might even play... they might play two spinners again, but with this pink ball game, it was the most, I'm not sure how to put non-Asian sort of pitches available, I'd say, with the conditions, with the pink ball, with the movement. Hopefully, I think Anderson and Broad will play, but it's fair to say England have been poor this test match and need a bit of a jump up again. So I think if England get a pitch that's fair, that is Indian conditions, but not to the extent it was this week, England could win the game. But I think Ravi Ashwin, sensational performance. I think we should we'll give him applause. We're not going to clap here because it would sound awful on the audio. But we've given him applause. 8 for something wickets and batted fantastically. India were the better side, and it depends. And the series is alive again. It just depends on if the groundsman gets the notes, and that's a real shame. Toby, what's your predictions?
I think if we lose this one, I can't see us getting close in that final test match. So I think we need to really just draw this game out, hopefully win the toss, bat first, get a few runs before the lights come on and the ball may start to swing around, which I think the last one, the last day-nighter in, I want to say, Mumbai in India against Bangladesh, seamers were just pretty dominant. So that might bode well for us if we do play two or three good seamers. Then maybe that hopes for us. But I guess the problem yet again is India have the likes of Bumrah, Sharma, Siraj. They have a very good depth of quick bowlers as well. So they could do quite easily the same. So I think hopefully we win. And if we do win this match, then I think it will be one of the most successful tours England will have had in India for a long time. Maybe only the 12-13.
Yeah.
Series there where England managed to win that will come close, I guess. So hopefully we have a chance.
This is URN.
And in other news, the West Indies continued their magical series against Bangladesh as the big man Rakeem Cornwall took 9 wickets in the game to win the series. Cornwall also took the winning catch at slip, completing a sensational test for the spinner. This was the second closest test match victory for the West Indies in runs, as they survived the Tigers chase by only 17 runs. That's not bad from Rakeem there, is it, Dom?
No, fair play to the big man. What a performance. I think he took the last catch as well. And there were some great clips of his players just jumping on his back. But from the angle it was taken, it did look like they were trying to knock him over, as if they were kids at a sort of knocking a dad over at a barbecue. So it looked fantastic. Josh De Silva played really well for his 95. And it was all around a very good performance by the West Indies. A tight game. I think it was the second closest game in runs that the West Indies have ever played. So what a great game. An advert for Test cricket despite the India game. The game's alive and well when Bangladesh play the West Indies. Some players have said, I can't think of a duller series, but this has been the best series with Mayer and Cornwall coming up big and just shocking the pundits. So 2-0 to the West Indies, what a performance from them.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It must be said as well, they had a lot of their sort of second team almost out, you could argue, missing a few of their bigger players. Jason Holder, their captain and sort of talisman for the past half a decade or so, wasn't in the squad, as well as lots of their sort of senior batsmen. And I guess now, down in South Africa, Pakistan finished off a thrilling T20 series. They won the third and final match, finishing the series 1-2. Mohammad Rizwan dominated the series, averaging almost 100 with the bat and carrying Pakistan to their win. The ODI segment of the tour begins on the 2nd of April as Pakistan players go back home for a month before another round of white ball series. And now on to the URN Ashes, as it's time for another game where Dom, as usual, comes up with a fantastic name of it. It's time for Owen Morgan A Feeling. Hit it. Hopefully I've managed to insert the song there. If not, I'm just going to sound very odd.
Otherwise, you've just had a breakdown on air. No. Oh, that would be great edit if James just takes it out in post-production. Just goes, no, let's make Toby have a drink on his own in his room. Right, I love that. Carry on.
I'll throw in a few cricket sounds or something. If not, maybe just a little bleep of silence.
We couldn't afford this. So
yeah, this is where we get URN sued for millions now, isn't it, of taking songs. Okay, so on to the game. The aim of this game is to get as close to you can as to the answer without getting it completely right. So I'm going to be asking Dom a question, like how many runs has so-and-so got, whatever it is, and he needs to get as close as he can without getting it bang on. And if he gets within the sort of the range I give him, might be to the nearest one, to the nearest 10, to the nearest 500, whatever it is, he'll get 6 runs and then 5 runs and 4 runs all the way down to 0 until he's too far out and then nothing. And if he gets it completely spot on, he gets a big fat 0 to spice things up a little bit. So for an example, Dom, to the nearest one, how many episodes of Sticky Wicket are live right now before this one on URN podcasts?
Well, I'm going to go 11 because I think there's 12. So I'd get 6 points, would I?
You would get 6 points, yes.
I wish this style of marking was imposed for our GCSE maths. We were the generation that got the new number system. And to be fair, they could have done that because I didn't have a clue about GCSE maths. So I like this game because it means I can be slightly wrong and I could be right.
It could work in your favour, couldn't it? So I think to give you, I've got six questions here. And I think to set you the win, I'd say I'm feeling 16 to win here, Dom, which should hopefully be a good result. So question number one, to the nearest 50 runs, how many test runs has Alistair Cook scored?
Wow. Okay. So it's a lot of runs he scored. It's famously that he scored a lot of runs. I will go 13,000. So 13,000. Not 1,300. But is 13,000 a lot of runs? Is it? Yeah, I'll go 13,576.
Oh, unfortunately, you're too far out. It was 12,472. Right. So okay. About 1,000 off, unfortunately. But in the margin for 12,000, that's not too bad, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. On to question number two. To the nearest 20, when was Nottingham County Cricket Club founded?
Okay. So Nottingham Forest was founded in 1865. They played a few games at Trent Bridge. I'm going to say 1885.
1885. It was 1841, actually. They were quite an early club. So you managed to get four runs there.
Four runs.
It's good. He's carved it away to the boundary for four.
That's good. Good runs. 12 to win.
12 to win. It's on the cards here. Okay, so to the nearest two, how many ICC World Cups have there been in total? So ODIs and T20s.
Okay, this is going to take a bit of maths. Right, let's think. All right, let's do ODI first. Why does I don't I have a pen that works? Right, okay. So ODIs. Oh my lord, this is a joke.
For the listeners' benefit, all I can see right now on the screen is Dom hunting around his room, looking on tables, looking at under things, on top of things, just for a pen that seems to work. I think third time lucky, hopefully, here.
Gone for a highlighter. Right, nice. Okay. So ODIs. Let's think. Let's be clever about this. So England have won one. Okay. One World Cup in the one-day format. Australia have won quite a few. They were three on the bounce. So I'm going to say, did they win anything in the early 90s? Okay, Sri Lanka have won one. India won. West Indies, they have won three. That's my big call. Okay. Australia. So that would mean it started in the 70s, didn't it? I want to say 78, I'm going to go for. And it's been a very weird collection of teams, a collection of years that they've played. It's not always been 4 years. So that's been about 42 years. And now I'm going to say there's a gap of five. So it's going to be about, oh, geez, my maths. It's going to be about 10-ish. So hang on, there's one, two, three, six. Australia have won four, let's say. I'm going to count in four. So they've won. So this is my math so far. England have won one World Cup by the biggest of margins. Australia have won three on the bounce under Ponting. Sri Lanka won one. India have won one. The West Indies have won three. Now it's time for the T20 maths. Okay, so India win the first. Pakistan win the second. England win the third. Then there was one in 2014. Yes, my maths has been supported by Australia. Yes. Okay, so then when there was one in 2014, which England were pathetic in. West Indies have won two. When the West Indies might have won that. And then we're not counting the one that's been cancelled, agreed?
Yeah, we're not counting that one, no.
Just men's tournaments.
Men's tournament, yes.
Okay. So I'm going to go for England with one World Cup, Australia with four World Cup stomachs at five, Sri Lanka with one, six, India. So that's 10 ODI World Cups plus one, two, three, four, five. So I'm going to go 16 World Cups overall that have been played. Is that right?
Luckily for you, the answer is not 16. The answer was 18. So you've done it. You've smashed the six back over the bowler's head.
Lovely.
So he's absolutely smashing it after getting nothing on that first one. He's on 10 now.
So what have I missed then? So
I think you missed the fifth Australian ODI World Cup, possibly. Because there were 12 ODIs and 6 T20s. So the 6 T20, I think there were... The West Indies, I know, have won two. We've won one. Did Sri Lanka win one as well? I'm not sure. Ooh. Or was that just the ODI one they may have won?
Right, I'll take that. So I'm on 10, and I need 6 to win off three more questions. Owen Morgan a feeling.
So a possibly slightly trickier one now as well. To the nearest five, what is Steve Smith's highest test score?
Ooh, okay. He's not scored a triple, has he? Or has he? Okay. I'm going to say 232.
232 is the call. To the nearest five.
Yeah.
If you hit six here.
Yeah.
You will have drawn level and only need one on that final two questions. What has happened? Here we go. 200 and what was the call?
232.
Two. He's hit five, unfortunately. It was 239. So he smashed it. All he needs now is two from the final two questions to take the lead and to bring himself back into the URN Ashes. So question number five. To the nearest five, what is the world record T20 international score by a country?
Oh. Can I have a clue who it was?
It was Afghanistan.
Well, England scored about 230 against Africa once. So I'm going to say 240.
240. To the nearest five. Unfortunately, it was a massive 278. So you've unfortunately failed to score any runs there. They absolutely blasted everywhere against Ireland.
Oh, Jesus. Hang on. What was the... Oh, so I'm 40 out, aren't I? Oh, no.
Yeah, just slightly too far, unfortunately. Okay, so on to the final question. He needs two here to win it. One to tie it and take it to a super over. Question number six. To the nearest 10, how many test dismissals does Matt Prior have?
Oh, right. Okay, let's think.
I'll tell you now, he has played in 79 test matches.
So that's 158 innings. And let's say he catches two wickets. Catches two or gets two stumpings is 316. Let's go with that. But that feels very high for a man who was never the greatest wicketkeeper. So I'm going to just say 300.
This is a big moment.
I don't know.
The answer was less than 300.
Okay.
It was 256, which means you scored two runs and have managed to win back for the first time in two weeks. The URN Ashes. Dom Allen, how are you feeling?
I'd just like to thank my family who stood by me when I was desperate to keep going as an Owen Morgan a feeling player. This is quite an emotional moment. It's just too much to sort of comprehend at some moments in life. Oh, so that's 3-2. We've got some good games coming up, can we just say? Some of the names are fantastic. But yeah, I think I'd just like to thank the listeners who stood by me. I know I get a lot of support on our Instagram page. I am the England to Toby's Australia, so I'd say. Yeah, I'm the fan favourite.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean, yeah. You definitely are. It was a shame. It was a very tight game as well. You know, the last couple of weeks, last week less so, but the week before, I think, where I managed to pinch the Carlos Brathwaite-esque over at the end with a couple sixes. It was very similar to this one. Took an early lead, struggled on that second last question, but then drew it back right at the end to squeeze through for a quick two on the final ball. It was good to see, and it'll be interesting now I'll be in your sort of seat answering the questions, and you'll be able to come up with a very interesting game as usual, and actually for once I won't have to message you asking for a name because you'll have to come up with it up yourself.
We'd like to say thank you for listening. It's been very fun talking to you, Toby. Hopefully England can get back on track, get a 2-1 victory over Ahmedabad. We will preview that test match as there is a 10-day interval between test matches. The interview with Lauren Winfield-Hill, it's fair to say, has come under some difficulties. We promised that, and it's fair to say it's sort of fallen away. Thank you for sticking with us. Thank you to Beats and Clevedon Cricket Club. Thank you to Blackball Cricket Club as well. And thank you to the University of Nottingham Ladies Cricket Club, who all sent in great questions. And we were unable to sort of get those to Lauren, which is a real shame. But remember, she is an international athlete. And in this time of Corona, there's obviously a lot of delays. So no one to blame, really. It's just unfortunate. Thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for listening. And Toby, go well.
Cheers, mate.
And thank you for listening.
This is URN.
That's the wicket. And the expression changes immediately. Number 600 for Jimmy Anderson.